really curious to hear your reactions. So we did see that Maimonides listed the belief and the yearning for the coming of the Messiah as one of the 13 principles of faith. And indeed, it is definitely a central belief. So much so that actually Rabbeinu Bachaya, look at this first source. I think it's fascinating. What he writes here, this first source on the top of the first page there, he quotes the verse in the Torah. It says, V'yavdel Elokim ben ha'or ben ha'choshech, God distinguished between light and dark. And then just skipping down two lines, says, V'inyan hazeh ramzu rabboseinu, the rabbis hinted at this, the gracious rabbah, k'shehochichu min ha'kasuf hazeh arba malchus. They argued that this verse, the sheets are there in the back, that this verse hints to, when it said that God distinguished between four, the light and the dark, it hints to the four kingdoms. Remember in the book of Daniel, it talks about the four kingdoms that will rise and fall, leading to ultimately the messianic redemption. And it says, for example, what does it mean? It says, Va'aretz ha'isatoh, it says that the land was tohu vohu, it was chaos. That was referring to Malchus Bavel. That's referring to the Babylonian Empire. That was just tohu. Uvohu, zu malchut Madai. That's Madai, that's maybe the Persian Empire. V'choshech, zu malchut Yavon. That's the Greek Empire, the darkness. Tahom, the depths. Zu malchus Romi, that's the Romans. V'ruach Elokim, and then it says the Spirit of God. Zuruchos shemashiach, that means that ultimately Mashiach will come. Uboor midrash hazeh ki Hashem yisparach v'parsha zu magid mireishis achris. It means that in the beginning of the Torah, it was hinting to the end. What's the end? V'kasuv kivein lirmzo sof hazman betchilas hazman. It was trying to hint at us at the end, at the beginning, which is what? L'horos ki tachlis kavanas habriya, that the purpose of the whole creation of the world, l'yimus Mashiach, was the Messianic era. That was what Rabbeinu Bachya wrote in his commentary on the Torah, that the Torah was hinting in the beginning about the Messiah as a way of saying that the beginning of the whole creation was for the goal of the Messianic redemption. So that's pretty big, right? That's like, it's pretty important belief in the Mashiach, according to that, right?
But isn't Mashiach ever just spoke out in the Torah directly?
Well, not directly. In the Navi, yes, but not in the Torah directly, no. A lot of places, yeah, a lot of places. But yes, Yeshua is one of them. Yechezkel, Yeshua, all the Nevi'im really talk about Mashiach. So here the Torah is saying, it's not saying it explicitly, but the Midrash is saying that the Torah there was referring to the four kingdoms and ultimately being the Mashiach. The Tanya writes, V'noda shimos Mashiach befrat kishiyichyu ha'mesim, when the Mashiach comes, especially when there's resurrection of the dead, heim tachlis v'shlemus brius Olam, that is the ultimate goal of the entire world. Olam hazeh shekach nivra mitchilaso. That was the reason why the world was created. Basically, saying the same thing as Rabbeinu Bachaya, that the world, the purpose of the whole world is the messianic redemption. So that seems to be pretty strong. Just as a couple of examples that belief in the Messiah and our hope in the Mashiach is very, very important. Now, those are classic sources, right? Rishonim, the Tanya. But look, Professor Gershom Scholem wrote a very interesting book called The Messianic Idea in Judaism. It's an academic study, but it's a very interesting work. And he has a critique, and I think it's something worth taking seriously, even though I'll critique his critique. But let's just read his critique. I'm going to read it. I'll read it. Here's what he argues that is part of the price of the Messianic idea. He says, the price demanded by Messianism, the price which the Jewish people has had to pay out of its own substance for this idea, which it handed over to the world. What's the price? The magnitude of the Messianic idea corresponds to the endless powerlessness in Jewish history during all the centuries of exile, when it was unprepared to come forward onto the plane of world history, meaning us as Jews. We were unprepared to become leaders in the world. There's something preliminary, something provisional about Jewish history, hence its inability to give itself entirely. For the Messianic idea is not only consolation and hope, right? We often think of the Messianic idea as being in bad times, we hope for Mashiach because it will console us, it will make things better. But he argues that every attempt to realize it tears open the abyss which led each of its manifestations ad absurdum. There is something grand about living in hope, but at the same time, there is something profoundly unreal about it. It diminishes the singular worth of the individual, and he can never fulfill himself. because the incompleteness of his endeavors eliminates precisely what constitutes its highest value. Thus, in Judaism, messianic idea has compelled a life lived in deferment. I italicized that because I thought it's such an interesting line. The messianic idea has compelled a life lived in deferment, in which nothing can be done definitely, nothing can be irrevocably accomplished. One may say, perhaps, the messianic idea is the real existentialist idea. Precisely understood, there is nothing concrete which can be accomplished by the unredeemed. This makes for the greatness of messianism, but also for its constitutional weakness.
I hear what you're saying.
What do you think? Yeah, so articulate, what do you think he's saying?
Because I feel like it's basically saying you're like capped out on like what you can actually achieve because you haven't actually brought Mashiach, you haven't brought Messiah, and then also it's like this deferment of like at some point in time this will console all of your like issues, right? It's like, and so it's kind of removing the individual from where they are today. Like the
right.
Part of me actually had some of his own sentiments. But I didn't,
yeah.
I wouldn't voice it that way. It's a little harsh.
Right. I mean, it's, when we want to accomplish something, it's like, well, really, I can't really accomplish anything. Ultimately, I have to wait for Mashiach.
Yeah.
Unless we believe that our actions are bringing Mashiach closer, but that's a different discussion. But, okay, there's a lot to say about what you said, but let's hear other comments.
But it's also the, you know, we're, by the way, I'm hearing it, sort of, we're in a temporal world, so everything ends and begins again and ends. And so whatever you're doing, it's all going to end up, I mean, at this point in my life where friends are sick and dying and stuff, mm-hmm. you think, well, it ends, so what difference does it make what we achieve? It's all going to end up being something that will pass away.
Uh-huh.
So
okay, interesting.
And I'm not quite sure whether the Mashiach and the idea of the Messianic age keeps us in an aspirational way, even though the reality is that whatever you aspire to is going to end up one day not meaning uh-huh. anything to the people that are there.
Right, so, okay.
I don't think it goes nowhere. Like, I feel like any person that does a 15, like, it generates some sort of energy in this world. Like, it exists.
Right.
So even after the person passed away, the teens are, like, there.
Right.
Right.
So then why do you feel concerned? Why do you feel sometimes that the belief in Mashiach holds you back?
Because I feel like it's a big hope in Judaism, and like it's very real. It's not like it's I think that like I hold both. Like I know that like as a Jew you have a lot of things that you should accomplish in this life, right? And you should be striving to bring the Mashiach, right? And you should be doing your best that you can as a Jew. Then at the same time, you kind of feel like, well, like, if I'm living, like, you're not living in Israel, we don't live in the times of Judah, we don't live in the times of the temple, then we're really kind of capped out of, like, what we can achieve.
Uh-huh.
So it's not that, like, what I'm doing now is not important. It's valuable, right? Like,
right.
Everything, and I think that, like, every Jew has a certain role in history. Like, mm-hmm. a rabbi who lived in Europe and, like, you know, had a big yeshiva, he wasn't living in Israel either, but, like, he taught
right. Okay. Interesting. Anyone else to whom this resonates?
I'm the most chatty one in the class.
Yeah. Others. Yes. Anyone else? Okay. Deborah.
I have a question about redemption. Like, what is redemption? What's the relationship of redemption to the Mashiach? I mean, in terms of, does it mean that when the Mashiach comes, we are redeemed.
The world is redeemed. There's no more suffering, no more war, no more all the things that we've been working towards that were there.
So on a personal level, even if you haven't done the work of redemption.
Well, possibly. That gets in all the debates we've been discussing for the past number of months. But okay, Paula.
I'm just further to what's already been said, I was thinking that I think this critique there is validity that it seems that it can lead to a feeling of apathy and a lack of agency, specifically when enemies come to attack us like during the Second World War. If it becomes, it's future oriented and people say Messiah will come and save us, that not being able to fight back or take steps that one needs to do now. Could definitely, I think, unfortunately, I think there have been cases like that with certain movements.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. That's part of the major critique, is that if it leads us to think that we should just be passive in our lives and in the world, then is that It could be beneficial, maybe psychologically or emotionally, but might that actually be harming us on the world stage, as he's sort of is arguing there? The life, live, and deferment, it doesn't allow us to play our role in history. So the truth is, have some pizza. Okay. Right.
It's never, like, think about our great grandparents. For them, it would be a dream that Jews could live in the land of Israel and have their own government.
Right.
Even if it's not like it's
a right, though, could seeing the state of Israel as Mashiach, that some people, as some people see it, that could also be dangerous in some of these ways. Also, no. What about when there's problems and it's like, does that undermine the entire belief?
But the fact that we have a sense of agency, the fact that we can mobilize,
right?
That we've never,
right. It's different today.
Right,
that's the difference today between what Paul is mentioning during the Holocaust. Okay, so let's go further. So that's Gershom Scholem's critique of the Rabbeinu Bachai that we saw in the Tanya. So on the one hand, we started by saying that the belief of Mashiach, it's like such a central belief in Judaism. Then we see this critique of Gershom Scholem. Now, the Sefer Ikarim, you know, we saw that the Rambam lists Mashiach as the 12th of the 13 Ikarim. The Rav Yosef Albo in Sefer Ikarim has just 3 Ikrei Emunah, not 13. And is Mashiach, belief in Mashiach, one of those 3? No, look how he writes it on the bottom of the page here. It says, Ha'amunah b'vias ha-Mashiach, mechuyeves al kol ba'al Torah's Moshe. Everyone should believe in Mashiach. That's definitely something they have to believe in. But then he says, Zeki lefisha ba b'tor mefurash achiyuv la'amin b'divrei Navi, because the Torah says to believe in Navi. It's actually going to your question before. Because we have the concept of Mashiach in the Navim. Torah says we have to believe in the Navi. In the Navi it says Mashiach will come. Because it says, Shenemar elav tishma'un. V'anavim nav'u b'vias Mashiach. And they told us that Mashiach will come. Hu mevorash kol mi she'enu ma'amin b'vias Mashiach. Hu kofer b'divrei Navim. Not believing Mashiach is going against the words of the prophets. V'over al mitzvah saseh. And that's violating a mitzvah in the Torah. So you have to believe in the Mashiach. Aval. But then he goes on with Yosef Albo. And he says, Aval. Mikol makom ein Ha'amanas b'vias ha-Mashiach ikar shetibata ator b'klala im lo yaminu ha'adam. But what if a person doesn't believe in Mashiach? The Torah is like a build. Everything connects to each other. You have to have every single piece together. But it could be that the structure could stand without the belief in Mashiach. In other words, it would be going against the Torah not to believe in Mashiach, but it's not one of the pillars that holds the building of the Torah up. It's possible to believe, to not believe in Mashiach and still have the structure of the Torah survive. That's what he argues. He concludes there in that piece. He gives an example here. He says, like, schar and onesh, reward and punishment, that for example, it can't survive. The whole thing can't survive without the belief in schar and onesh. That's one of the principles that you have to believe in for the whole structure to last. But without believing Mashiach, it could last. You could have your emuna. If someone doesn't believe Mashiach, they're not called a kofer beikar in the essence of Torah. But it is a true belief. That everyone who believes in the Torah should believe it. So I just thought it's interesting because it's downplaying compared to what we saw. Like, let's say for example, in the Rabbeinu Bachai. Rabbeinu Bachai says the whole purpose of the Torah is Mashiach, and he's sort of saying it's definitely something we believe in. But can you say that it's an ikar of the Torah? And he actually says it's not.
Rambam would say it is. It's one of the
Rambam said it is.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I think it's interesting that
people
think it is.
Yeah, interesting. No, yes.
I mean, if you have this belief, it can always keep you, no matter how dark it gets, can keep you afloat by having hope.
Right. Okay. So we're going to come back to that. This is the whole broader picture. So let's look at the Ramban. Nachmanides, you know, you've heard of these debates that they used to force Jews into. A lot of it was really, a lot of these were, you know, they would set up these debates. And there was no way to win the debates. And it was like, you get killed if you don't debate, and you get killed if you win the debate, and you get killed if you lose the debate. It was horrible. And Ramban was oftentimes forced into these debates. So he had a debate with Pablo Castriani. That was the famous Vikuach Ramban. So you have to always ask yourself, what he said in this debate, do you think it's necessarily what he wanted to teach the masses, or is it how he was debating? You know, there's always a polemical aspect to it. But it's interesting that in the Vikuach HaRamban, in his debates with Pablo Christiani, here's what he says there about how central the belief in Mashiach is. He says, Ein hadin vam emes shalano ikro b'mashiach. The ikr is not in belief in Mashiach. And look what he actually says to him. Ki ata shava li yosem b'mashiach. He's talking to Pablo Christiani. He says, you, to me, you're also important like Mashiach. Why? Ata melech v'hu melech. You're a king and he's a king. Just, they're kings. I could talk about modern day politics, but I'm going to leave it out. He says, Ata melech goy, v'hu melech Yisrael. So there's a Jewish king and a non-Jewish king, but you're king. Ki Mashiach eino ela melech basar v'adam kamocha. Mashiach just means the king. It's just the king of the Jewish people, a human king like you. U'kesha'ani oved et bori, when I serve Hashem, b'reshuzcha, I am under your permission, under your kingship. Begalus, and I'm in this exile, ubeinui v'shivud, and I'm in suffering and under servitude. V'cherpas amim, and I'm disgraced. Asher yichar punu tami, they were constantly disgraced. Schari meruba. So when I serve Hashem, and it's even when I serve God, despite all of the disgrace that brings upon me and the ridicule it brings upon me, I get a lot of reward for it. For being a proud Jew at a time when I am ridiculed for it, it's even more. There's even more reward for that. Okay. Ki ani ose ola le'elokim migufi. It's like I'm giving a sacrifice to God with my body. Ubeze ezke lachaye ha'olam haba. And through that, I earn olam haba. That's the place. Ha'olam yoser v'yoser. More and more and more. Aval kishye melech Yisrael mitorasi Moshe b'chol ha'amim. But when Mashiach comes, and as in ruling the whole world, v'al korchi yeshli la'amod b'torah se'yehudim. And so they say, okay, now I'm following the Torah, but it's not really much of a choice, because of course, I'm going to observe Torah when Mashiach comes. So, ein schari meruba kolkach. You don't get so much schar. So, in some ways, I get more reward now when Mashiach's not here, and I'm doing it because I know I think it's right, and so I'm overcoming the challenges to do the right thing than when Mashiach comes and it's obvious. So, what's the big deal about Mashiach? Do you think he really believes this, or is he just trying to say this because it's a debate?
I think he's trying to keep the Jews safe. Like, not that I heard
King. Uh-huh. Why would it be dangerous for Jews to believe in Mashiach in under Spanish rule? Jewish history in Spain is not pretty. Sorry?
I think it comes to a question of Christianity, why don't you believe in our Messiah?
Uh-huh. Okay, there could definitely be that. What about, so he wants to downplay the whole issue of Mashiach. Okay, I don't believe in yours, but what's the big deal? Basically, you're a king, he's a king. Yeah. Why did he need to hate us? Because we didn't accept him. Right? Sorry? Right.
Maybe he's getting close to his people.
In what way?
Like he's saying, come on guys, even though we live in such a difficult time, the fact that he's speaking more to his audience than he is to the
right
person.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And saying there's value in our lives today,
yeah,
even though we're not there yet. But there's a lot of value, maybe more value. Like we should be proud of what we're doing.
It's not easy for us to be a Jew at this time, but
uh-huh. Very good.
Sometimes if someone denies something, generously, if you deny something, it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Right. Okay. Very good. I want to just go to the last couple of sources because we're almost out of time already. But it's interesting that in Sefer Geula, the Ramban himself, where it's not a polemic, he seemed in this next source, we're not going to read it now just for the sake of time, but he seems to there also say the main thing isn't Mashiach, but Olam Haba, which is a result of serving Hashem. And he gives a similar tone, kind of downplaying the centrality of Mashiach even there. But I want to share with you now just two interesting sources. One, an amazing story about Rav Chaim of Brisk. But first, I think a rebuttal to the Gershom Shalom piece. Gershom Shalom's argument against Mashiach, this whole life lived in deferment, he made a strong point about you know, the dangers of always expecting Mashiach to take care of everything and that we don't have to do our part. That was Gershon Scholem's argument. But this there's an interesting article that I once read named Neon Weislater. I don't know anything about him, but someone once recommended this article to me. It's called A Passion for Waiting, Liberal Notes on Messianism and the Jews. And here's his argument. And I think that this is a kind of an argument with Gershom Shalom. And it's the other side of the story. And I think it defends the Rambam and the and strong belief in Mashiach. Here's what he says. Not just belief. I mean, strong anticipation for Mashiach, wanting Mashiach to come. He says, the rejection of redemption reveals an extraordinary confidence about one's spiritual and existential situation. The proof of this confidence is halacha, Jewish law. The performance of the commandments implies that this imperfect world is not so imperfect that the ideal of perfection is impossible without it. The premise of halachic life is that the absolute is here and now available. Meaning we can accomplish things because we have a prescription for it. We have the Torah. And the Torah guides us. Jews of all people resolutely do not hate the world. And the halachic life may be seen as a regular rejection of such hatred. If the Jews prefer to wait, it is because they do not lack the means with which to begin, because they are already in the middle. They can be patient for the end because they are already in the middle of an engagement, a steady and stable engagement with the eternal. I think this is a rejection of Gershom Scholem's. He's saying, we're not just waiting for nothing. We're in the middle of something. We're not just waiting and doing nothing. We're part of a process. We're part of a story. And we believe we're part of the story and that we have the means to keep the story going, which is Jewish living. Impatience was deemed by the rabbis to be the supreme distortion that Messianism visited upon Judaism. I'll read that line again. Impatience was deemed by the rabbis to be the supreme distortion that Messianism visited upon Judaism. Jews, as is well known, are forbidden to force the end and to calculate the end. They're forbidden, that is, to deplete the present, which is the only and proper time for moral life and ritual life, for halachic life. For the rabbis, the fear of the Messiah was finally the fear of sin. They viewed the rupturing of history also as the rupturing of the ritual and the ethical framework. And the law, as they knew it and observed it, was the theater of religious meaning, more desirable than the abrogation of the law. The four cubits of halacha were large enough and strenuous enough and enchanted enough, and so the fifth cubit, the Messiah's parcel, could be resisted. What do you think? What does this say to you? The world is imperfect, but we have to live in the here and now. In the imperfect world, we have to, by building community, by building Torah, living Judaism, it's not just sitting back and waiting, it's actually living meaningful lives is actually the point. Yeah.
This makes sense to me. I mean, because we are just in the here and now. And if we're not living our best life, you know, of course, we're living at a wonderful time. To be the Jew, you know, it's not, I mean, although things are
right.
But you know what I mean?
Okay.
But I think that the here and now is where we process everything.
Uh-huh. So, well, but having a goal for the future, it's like trying to fulfill the present with sense of purpose. So look at this last story. There's a story that Rabbi Soloveitchik told that I always thought was just a fascinating story. He says it's about pogroms, and I thought it's so relevant for everything we're going through now. It's by Rabbi Rakefet Rakoff's book about stories about Rabbi Soloveitchik. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said this in an interview with Levi Yitzchak Harushalmi. It was published in Mariv, in the Israeli newspaper, in 1975. So not too long after the 1973 Yom Kippur War. He says, let me tell you a story that I heard from my late father, my teacher, who heard it from his father, Rav Chaim of Brisk, Chaim Soloveitchik. Here's the story. At the end of World War I, when Rav Chaim was in Minsk, the Gentiles staged a pogrom against the Jews. One day, Reb Chaim was sitting with a group of Jews who were bemoaning the killings, the plundering, and the destruction of the entire Jewish communities. In the midst of their discussion, one of the Jews exclaimed, if only we could be certain that these were the pangs of redemption. Right? Chevlei HaMashiach. If we just knew that this was part of Mashiach coming, if we just knew these were the pangs of redemption that precede the coming of Mashiach. But before he was able to complete the sentence, Rav Chaim interrupted him and explained, I do not agree with you. Taken aback, The Jew responded, because why would that be bad to say? I heard a lot of people saying that lately in the last few months, since October 7th. If I knew this is part of Mashiach coming, like, then it will all make sense. Then it will be comforting. And Rav Chaim wouldn't allow him to say that. Why? So he said, what did I say, Rebbe, that you did not agree with? I barely said anything, right? All I said is, I'm hoping this is part of Mashiach coming. Why are you so upset by it? Rav Chaim replied, listen to this. You said too much. You imply that all the suffering and sacrifices would be worth it if only we could be certain that these were the pangs of redemption. Chevli HaMashiach. I don't agree with this approach because it's totally against the halacha. The law is that saving lives, pekuach nefesh, is docha kol haTorah kula, cancels the entire Torah. Accordingly, it also cancels the coming of Mashiach. Who says that Mashiach will come only through the murder of innocent Jews? God has many ways to bring the Messiah, and certainly he does not have to bring him through the shedding of innocent Jewish blood. This is the Masorah, the tradition I received from Rav Chaim of Brisk. Meaning not to say, I hope that this death and suffering, we want to override death. We want to say, I want to bring Mashiach through the things we've been talking about lately, through, you know, medical technology and incredible enhancements of life. Like, we're not looking for Mashiach in death and suffering. We're looking for Mashiach for redemption in hope, in goodness, in overcoming suffering. And that's the tradition that we're looking for Mashiach. So, in other words, it takes it out of the passive realm. It's not saying, okay, we suffer and die, but okay, hopefully it's Mashiach. It's saying, We fight against suffering. We fight against illness. We fight against death. And we fight against evil. And that's our way of bringing Mashiach. It's not pacifist. It's activist in terms of trying to make the world a better place. And that will lead to Mashiach in a positive way. I thought that's an amazing story. What?
That's a better version.
You like it? Any other comments? We're basically out of time.